Thousands of refugees in Gaza during this operation, running away, trying to save their life, leaving family members behind. They didn't know until today, not everybody is sure who was killed and who was not. People are still looking for their relatives. And then his family is watching YouTube and seeing their son being killed by a sniper in Sajaiya. And this is how they found out he's dead.
Well, we will leave it there. And for our listeners, we are showing the video on television, the horror that his parents discovered afterwards, his family. Eran Efrati, want to thank you for being with us. Former Israeli combat soldier turned anti-occupation activist, investigative researcher, recently interviewed a number of Israeli soldiers who participated in the Shajaiya massacre in Gaza. Later this month, Eran Efrati will testify at the Russell Tribunal in Palestine in Brussels. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And today is September the 12th, 2014. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves from Henry Ford College. And I'm joined in the studio by our WHFR news director, John Conroy. Welcome, John. Happy Friday.
Yeah, thank you, Jay. Happy Friday to you.
Okay. A little chilly out there, but it gives us an excuse to wear our WHFR.FM jackets.
Wearing proudly right now as we speak.
Yes, he wants to keep warm. Even the studios are not chilly here but today, no. But you're still warming up from the outside, I know. Well, we've got a very special show coming up in a few minutes. We'll have an interview with Mary Buzema, who is the candidate for governor of Michigan. Mary Buzema, never heard that name before. Because you watch too much television, folks. You don't read enough. Sorry, no insult intended. But she's the Libertarian Party candidate for governor. You say, well, they weren't in the primaries. No, because the Democrats and Republicans won't let any other party be in the primaries. So you can't even, you know, hear their name mentioned or vote for who would be the best Libertarian or Green Party member. And I understand now, John, too, and I didn't see this a month ago, but I read somewhere that there is a U.S. Taxpayers Party candidate for governor, too, in Michigan, and he'll be on the ballot this fall. And I didn't, and I look up this stuff. I do. I mean, we got this show, and I try to keep up, and I just saw it mentioned in another article somewhere. And I'm not sure we can get that person on the air, but I'm just saying the major media, and we're talking about electronic, radio, and TV, and so on, for some reason, they like to believe there's no candidates but Democrats and Republicans. So they're narrowing your possible choices. Mm-hmm. If you don't know about the candidates and what they stand for, well, obviously you're not going to vote for them. Mm-hmm. But if you know about them, well, you might vote for them. Who knows? You might not, but... You know, some people are always saying, oh, Democrats, Republicans, they're all alike. I don't know. You know, I don't even want to vote. Well, guess what? There are more choices. There are more candidates out there that will be legally on the ballot and could win if you vote for them. So we're going to talk to the Libertarian Party candidate for governor, Mary Buzema, in just a few moments. We asked her to call in to the station. She's on the west part of the state, I think, today. And I'm going to do about 30 minutes with her in just a few moments. While we're waiting for that call, I just want to say, and yesterday, of course, if today is September 12th, yesterday was September 11th, 9/11. And this is from, I saw this on Alec Jones' website, and yeah, his website, Infowars.com, and he's somewhat conservative, some people say conspiratorial, crazy person, talk show host. But nonetheless... Just this little poster, 9/11, never forget. It wasn't Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan, or Libya, or Syria, or Iran. None of them caused 9/11. None of them were responsible for it. But what happened to all of them? We invaded them all anyway.
We took them all. Yeah.
We attacked them all. We killed innocent civilians and some soldier types. But 9/11, never forget, it wasn't Iraq or Afghanistan or Pakistan or Libya or Syria or Iran. Got a phone call coming in. Hi, this is WHFR.FM. Jay speaking. Hi, Mary. We're ready for your call and to put you on the air. So just about 5 or 10 seconds, okay? And we hope to be, you can stay with us for about 30 minutes. That's still good for you? Okay, wonderful. All right. So just hang on. We'll put you on. That's our phone caller. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mary, are you connected with us?
I sure am.
Okay, and you can hear me. That's good. Again, my name is Jay Koronick, and you knew that, Mary. We've communicated by email. John Conroy is also here in the station. He's on one of the microphones. He's our WHFR news director, one of our many volunteers here at our independent non-commercial station. It is our goal, as much as possible, to try to interview challengers, not incumbents, and third-party candidates, not Democrats and Republicans so much, because, well, all of you folks are good, legal, solid choices. You've got unique ideas and plans, and we want the public, as many people are listening to us, either on broadcast or online to our station, to find out more. And, you know, the major media haven't done much. For example, may I ask you at the outset, have you done many interviews with commercial radio stations so far?
This is my first one.
Well, there you go. And we're not commercial, I should say.
You're not commercial.
Yeah, we don't care about political contributions or anything like that. We're just surviving on the contributions from our loyal listeners once a year. Okay. It's an honor to be the first radio station anyway, but we hope you do get more communication out there with radio and television stations. Because I think that's their responsibility, you know. But even locally, our weekly papers in the Dearborn area here, they don't even do any stories on candidates anymore. They sometimes reprint things that the League of Women Voters have done to collect short statements about where the candidates are. And they don't even do any endorsements anymore because they're afraid that they will lose, I don't know, subscribers. And so the papers are letting us down, too, in terms of helping our democracy to have the widest range of choices. Well, thank you anyway for agreeing to speak to us. I'll let you speak right now. Give us a brief biography of yourself, your past experience, and maybe why you chose to become part of the Libertarian Party. Again, we're speaking with Mary Buzuma. That's Buzuma, Libertarian Party candidate for governor. Let me just, even at the outset and through the time, I want to mention that people can go to mi.lp.org. That's the Michigan Libertarian Party website to find out more information, too. So, okay, the biography. It's all up to you, Mary.
All right. I was born and raised in Grand Haven, Michigan, and I attended Kalamazoo College and received a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. But like a lot of people who graduated around the time of, around the Carter administration, which was known for that wonderful word known as stagflation, I couldn't find a job, and my dad was in the Navy, so I just walked into the recruiting office one day just to see what's up, and before I knew it, I was on a plane to Orlando, and I was in boot camp, and I was in the Navy, where I spent 26 years as an intelligence specialist.
Explain for us what your responsibilities were. I assume it means you had a high degree of intelligence, first of all.
Very smart person.
Of course, and we want to believe that. Of course we do. But in fact, I'd like to believe that everybody in the military has a high degree of intelligence. But especially in that area, what sort of things were you doing? And you've had a long career. Are you retired from that now?
Yes, I am. I retired a few years ago.
Okay, but 17 years of experience. So what sort of things were you doing with the U.S. Navy in their intelligence area, if you can tell us?
Oh, sure. I can give you a. Okay. I can give you a. If I tell
it's
you
not
too
classified.
Much, you know, I'll just have to find you and kill you.
Right. I've heard that.
But no, I started out in imagery interpretation, where you look at satellite imagery and you report and mm-hmm. you do analysis on that. And I also did ocean surveillance, which I kept track of ships, basically, you know, foreign ships, foreign Navy ships, and sending out reports to our Navy that was, you know, deployed. I also did some strategic planning with the Office of Naval Intelligence. I was also involved in precision targeting. Working with pilots, briefing them on targets. I also spent some time in Paris, France, working with the Office of the Naval Attaché, working with the French Navy.
That's not too tough.
And okay. helping out, arranging all our port visits, all our U.S. Navy port visits.
Yeah, I was going to ask you where you had been stationed during your time with the Navy and the U.S. obviously, and also Paris and any other mm-hmm. foreign countries.
Yes, I was deployed with the John C. Stennis Battle Group in the Middle East, where we were supporting Operation Southern Watch. So I visited several, you know, countries out in the Middle East, and I haven't gone anywhere in the Far East. Mostly stayed on the East Coast, Europe, you know, Mediterranean.
Okay.
I also, you know, with the Office of the Naval Attaché, and then with working in D.C. with the Office of Naval Intelligence. Again, I was involved in, you know, overt collection. As a rep with for the British Navy and the Canadian Navy and some other navies doing intelligence collection, memorandums of agreement,
wow.
et cetera.
So, yeah, it's a lot of high level, sort of almost sort of like a State Department type, and even in a way a little bit CIA, you know, information gathering and interpretation, strategic planning kind of activity. So, that must have been pretty exciting in a way, unless they kept you buried in an office or
no,
in a
no,
small cabin of a boat no. somewhere. A ship, was, I'm sorry, a ship.
Yeah. I enjoyed it because working as I did, I never had the same job twice. Mm-hmm. So you're always learning something new. You're always meeting somebody new. And working with being on aircraft carriers and working with foreign navies, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you now, just because it's one of the most popular broadcast television shows, you weren't in the NCIS.
No, but okay. I did work with agents.
Oh, okay. Okay. Now, NCIS, do they usually always just investigate homicides or violence? Is that what they do, or is that
usually,
correctly portrayed
yeah,
on TV?
NCIS
involved.
Yeah. It's our
police
criminal
force.
Investigation
yeah.
unit.
Okay.
That gets in whenever there's a crime involved with U.S. Navy or Marine Corps personnel.
I see.
And NCIS okay. is sort of our, you know, police arm.
Well, that's done a great job of getting continuing the Navy out there in popular culture, even though they don't get on boats too much in that show. But still, it's a high quality program, and I think fairly.
Oh no,
accurate
I like
too.
It. I watch it all the time.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. Okay, so how did you get involved with the Libertarian Party?
I got involved with the Libertarian Party because I was basically dissatisfied with both parties. When you're young, when I was in college, we're all socialists, right? I was involved with, you know, more of a Democrat leaning. It was all power to the people until mm-hmm. I realized it was not power to the people. It was power to government. So I became dissatisfied with that. And when I joined the military, my leanings sort of drifted towards, the Republican, conservative branch. But then I got very dissatisfied after our involvement with the war in Iraq.
Mm.
And I was listening on a radio show driving on my way home. I was I can't remember exactly when that was, but there was a gentleman by the name of Ron Paul.
Yes, of course. Representative Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm. And it started to get me thinking. And he was talking about some books. And I think the first book I picked up was Bastiat's The Law. Mm. Started reading that. And one thing led to another. And after I retired, I found a local libertarian organization, which was the Tidewater Libertarian Party, and got involved with them.
Okay. Yeah, Ron Paul, a tremendous speaker. In his last presidential bid, he came to Dearborn, Michigan here, and in the largest city auditorium, 1,200 seats, and we packed the place, people of Dearborn. Obviously not that many libertarians in Dearborn per se, but he spoke so strongly and clearly. Of course, he has this tremendous knowledge of economics. You mentioned one of the classic economists that he was familiar with, and many others. And he just, of course, he's retired now from being in the House of Representatives. His son, Rand Paul, who does not quite see things in the same way, and very often kids don't see things the same way as their dad, but still has a lot of libertarian leanings, too. Can you delineate for the public, and this is always takes time out of the interviews, probably, about why you're a libertarian, not a Democrat or Republican, but in particular, how are libertarians not, in specific, how are libertarians not Republicans? They're often thought to be a kind of Republican, when in fact, there's a lot of issues that they do agree with traditional liberals or Democratic Party.
I like to see it as, some people see it as going straight down the middle of the road. I tend to see it, we travel on both shoulders.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting concept.
We agree
yeah.
with the left as far as personal liberty issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we more, and then we agree with the right as far as economic freedom issues and fiscal responsibility issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about, it's because of your, if I may speak a little bit for you, because of your philosophy of engendering and encouraging liberty to its greatest extent for the people, that there are issues that have been considered traditionally liberal or traditionally conservative that just automatically become part of your focus. Mm-hmm. And so it the old dichotomy, well, you're either a liberal or you're a conservative or somewhere in between or centrist, that really is not the case with the Libertarian Party, where it's you're very straightforward and supportive of liberty wherever that takes you in whichever issues are involved. And so you can be extremely consistent, but in fact, it breaks down the old dichotomy of liberal-conservative, which I sort of agree with you. I don't think Democrats and Republicans are clearly one or the other these days as a party, as either party, that they seem to be. Well, it's gridlock anyway. So, but a lot of people also say, and I hear this among people that talk about politics anyway, that libertarians are kind of Tea Party people, but they're kind of wishy-washy or something.
Kind of wishy-washy.
Well, yeah, because
no,
the Tea Party
actually, typically loves
these foreign wars, for example. It loves the buildup of our army and navy, and I'm sure you're in favor of supporting the Navy, but nonetheless, unnecessary foreign wars. Most Tea Party people really want to see us, like, attack everybody that we don't like, it seems, like many of the so-called neoconservatives of the Republican Party, like John McCain these days. But so how do you, when people say, well, are you part of a Tea Party, or is Tea Party part of you, how do you delineate that to anybody that might ask?
Well, actually, the roots of the Tea Party are libertarian. As far as the fiscally conservative, small government, mm-hmm. or freedom issues, I'm a non-interventionist. Being in the military, you see what happens when we insert ourselves too much into countries. And what happens, the consequences. And also, but also being in the military, also you get to visit, you know, some areas where liberty is not, where people would tell me, oh, you lived in Paris, oh, what a wonderful city, what a wonderful country. And yeah, but it's very expensive to live there. People don't realize that they pay a lot in taxes to get what they get. And they're going through some problems right now as far as the so-called running out of other people's money to fund a lot of their programs. And that, and French people have to work almost till the end of September to even pay their taxes.
Right. And but, of course, they do get a lot of benefits we won't go into now, like the health care is considered one of the best in the world and at the lowest cost per person, even though, yes, everybody has to pay quite a lot for that. And so we won't go into that. That's an international issue. But I would say, too, that to add to the discussion, that the Tea Party is not an official party. It's a group of people. Maybe they're former libertarians or just they've taken some libertarian beliefs as Republicans, and they're very inconsistent from one person to another, even though they say they're, oh, we're part of a Tea Party. But the movement itself, I think there's two or three different groups. Tea Party Patriots, I know, is pushed on Fox News by Hannity all the time, even though they're a sponsor of his radio show, for gosh sakes, and he still plugs them on Fox. Anyway, that's just the latest brouhaha on that.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, but I'm just saying is that some of these more organized Tea Party groups, and there's not just one, there's a couple at least, are really spin-offs from Republican people, who Republican pollsters in a couple of cases, who just sort of want to keep the Tea Party people that think that way as Republican voters. That's sort of my insight. I don't know. But there's not a lot of consistency there. But the Libertarian Party, and it began around 1980, if I'm not mistaken?
It began in 1971.
71, okay. But it's been fairly consistent on almost all the issues you've mentioned so far, and all of its issues, ever since then, because of the connection with the principles of liberty. And I think that's amazing, and that's so different than almost every other political party. We're talking here on WHFR with Mary Buzema, who is a Libertarian Party candidate for governor. I should say you wear the hat of a party chairperson in Michigan.
Yes, so. I do, and it keeps me very busy. But yes, I am the chair of the state party right now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm using this candidacy, although it has, you know, kept me really, really busy, to sort of promote the party, try to grow some local affiliate groups in Michigan, get some people energized as far as liberty goes, and like I said, hopefully, you know, grow our party. We've been really we've been very successful in Kalamazoo. That affiliate, which was strong a few years ago, sort of died out. But now we've got some new people in, some new energy, two high-profile candidates in that area. With Mike Stamp.
The attorney general candidate you have? Is that the...
No, that would be Mike...
I don't have the list in front of
Lawrence
me, I'm sorry.
Lawrence Wenke and Mike Stample.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Who are running.
Oh, Mike, yes, I read about Mike, and he, was he the fellow that had a challenge to Terry Lynn Land and Bill Peters for debating?
No, that would be Jim Fulner.
Oh, Fulner, yeah, okay.
U.S.
Senate
candidate, right. Who... recently was challenging both Terry Land and Gary Peters.
I found my list now.
In a debate.
Right.
And
which they have chosen not to.
Debate or not. I don't know if our governor or
not sure anybody's going to debate.
Or are going to debate either.
Right. But, of course, you'd love to be involved in a debate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, come on. A shower, Snyder debate. What a snooze fest! Get the libertarian candidates or the third party candidates at least to, you know, wake everybody up.
People have to know, and I keep telling them on this show, just because we're into choices, not just you know, outside ideas. We're into having the maximum number of choices in order to make good decisions. Why is it, and you can say, speak for this because I know you know, why is it that libertarians or Green Party or U.S. Taxpayers Party candidates legally on the ballot are not invited to these debates when they do happen on TV?
Well, personally, and this is, you know, just speaking from me, is I think they're afraid of us because we do bring different ideas to the table, start people thinking away from big government and away from spending and, like I said, just getting some different ideas out there. And then people find out that, hey, you know, there's really no difference between a Republican and a Democrat. Yeah. They're all big government. They're all big spenders. And they are very receptive to our ideas.
Right. Status quo is always, and the status quo is either Democrats or Republicans in terms of elections in most cases, in most places. And they're afraid of new ideas, even if they don't think there are going to be too many people subscribing to that. And so that's why the primaries in Michigan were set up by the Democrats and Republicans to not include third parties. That's why you weren't asked, because I'm not a believer personally, and I've said on the show, and all the opinions expressed in the show, by the way, and even by you, Mary, are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College, by the way. We have to say that at least once every show.
Yes.
Nonetheless, what do we need primaries for? And in the way that they're set up now, they're just advertisements for the Democrats and Republican candidates. And to me, if the political party doesn't know who their best candidates are, and with among themselves democratically vote on who their best candidates are, how can the public know these people that well? You know, it's just crazy why we have to go through the cost and expense of primaries. If people are part of political parties, then, oh my gosh, their party should know who their best candidates are and make those choices themselves. But it's not done for that. It's just done for publicity for Democratic and Republican candidates.
Right, and it keeps the duopoly going as far as, you know, politics goes.
Sure.
And no, they should select their candidates the same way we do in a convention.
Sure. Yep.
That way, you know, you're not spending all this money on a coronation.
You know, and going back to the primary just for one last moment, I mean, even in the Democratic primary and Republican primary, there were some contests. Like in Michigan, in Wayne County, we had 11 people, I think, running for the Democratic primary for Wayne County executive. What was that?
Mm-hmm.
Heck of a horse race, right?
Right.
And normally a Democrat is going to get elected anyway, but 11 different Democrats running. So some people, it energized them to go and vote in the Democratic primary. But in fact, Mark Schauer was the only one at the top of the ticket, and Snyder was the only one at the top of the Republicans. So there really wasn't any choice among Republicans or Democrats in terms of their candidates at the top level. They were already pre-decided. So
Right. What,
you know, that was just wrong from all kinds of philosophical points of view. Well, let's move on, Mary.
Okay,
If you were governor, okay. Well, okay, I got us, before we go to that, and we'll finish up with the specifics. We still have about 10 minutes or so of our interview to go. People are going to say, but a vote for Mary Buzema and your lieutenant governor, Scotty Bowman, that's just throwing your vote away. I mean, you've heard this one before, I know, but we got to toss it out there and you can quickly give your answer. You know, it's just going to cause, I don't know, some people might believe it's going to cause Schauer to get elected because it's a horse race sort of. Schauer, the latest poll I saw, Schauer is 45% and Snyder is 43%. But I'm not sure they were.
I'm thinking in there in about 3% right now.
Right, yeah. If that poll even reflected other candidates, which I bet it didn't, it's probably the difference there is just a matter of people that don't know or don't want to say. So if you're really going to do a poll, why don't you put all the names up there that really cause some more accurate vote or cause people to start thinking. But no, I'm sure they didn't even include the other party candidates for that. So is it a wasted vote or not?
No, it is not, because votes belong to the voters. I don't take from either party, or I could take from both parties if I could, but No, votes belong to the voters. And a vote for a libertarian sends a message saying, look, we're tired of the status quo, and we're not going to support you, and whatever happens, you know, is going to happen. But, you know, votes have to be earned or bought.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it sends a message. And I think the Libertarian Party is, you know, a positive vote.
Yeah, it's not just a vote for none of the above. It means the Libertarian Party, as we're trying to explain here, does mean something. So
yes, it does. Right. And it, like I said, it gives you a voice. It sends a message.
Yeah, I personally have, in about 40 plus years of voting, a couple times, and I'm so mad at myself. I voted for candidates because I was mad at one of them, so I voted for the other one. You know,
right?
And that's just the wrong thing to do. You vote for the best candidate. Never vote for a candidate because you're mad at the other candidate that might win. You know, you vote for the principles involved, or you vote for the person in some cases. And all right, libertarian as governor, what would you do differently in terms, or what new initiatives might you begin? I mean, we're talking usually about education, higher ed, and public K-12, and infrastructure, the roads. How are we going to handle that? And anything else you want to mention? Let you touch a couple topics here.
Well, I've been you know, sent several questionnaires, and a lot of them focus on, like I said, those issues. Transportation, all right. As far as raising the gas tax or, you know, fees for trucks, et cetera, you know, there's plenty of money in the budget for the roads.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the House cobbled together about $450 million extra. You know, that's a lot of change under the couch cushions there.
Although Governor Snyder felt, and other, you know, people that supposedly know about infrastructure say that we need at least $1 billion or more just for 10 years in order to repair the roads and get back to just a state of maintenance, roads and bridges. So that's a lot of dollars. Now, of course, helping out your argument here, I just see a press release from the Mackinac Center of Public Policy, or is it Mackinac Center?
Mackinac Center,
okay.
Yes.
That they, you know, they think if you cut a lot of stuff, you'd have money for the roads, but you have to cut a lot of other places, of course, to come up with $1 billion a year. But he thinks that's totally doable. That
it could be if we cut the size, cut spending, which means cut the size of cut the size of government. I mean, Michigan's government is huge. It's extremely centralized. Lansing sucks up all the money, and then it parcels it out to, you know, favorites,
right?
And picks winners and losers. But this type of income redistribution, this money from the many sent out to the very few, is a recipe that cooks big government here. We have over 200 boards and commissions just in the executive branch. Everything from the Carrot Commission all the way down to the War of 1812 Commission.
I was going to say, I love carrots, but I'm not so sure about the War of 1812.
And that, you know, and even that's going to go on for a couple more years. When did the War of 1812 end?
Right.
It was the 200th anniversary.
Yeah, I've got
all these boards and commissions. Mm-hmm. Basically, they're staffed by, particularly the Liquor Commission, are staffed by former
legislators,
representatives, and senators who have been term limited out, and they end up getting spots on these boards, which just leads to more special interests.
Right. Well, let me ask you about two other things. One is, you know, a large portion of our budget, larger than other states, is spent on prisons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a couple scandals about prison food and so on, and the governor hasn't really done too much. They tried to put some reforms in place, and not give maggoty food to our prisoners. But, you know, that's a real interesting social problem, too. Why do we have so many people incarcerated in Michigan? And, of course, the costs are huge. I'm not sure privatization is the answer. And that's obviously a huge chunk of change there. I just am looking at a report from Bridge Magazine, which is pretty impartial here. But they say state spending on higher education, that's college, of course, fell by 28% from 2008 to 2014. And that, of course, makes universities and even Henry Ford College here, two-year school, well, plus we've got a four-year degree coming up in hospitality education pretty soon, thanks to the state legislature doing that for us. But, you know, we're spending so much less on higher ed. Now, I know it's public education, but it just puts education out of range of the people that aren't already rich or don't qualify for scholarships, like being the top of their class or something. Is that a funding problem? I mean, K-12, some people say they lost some money, and Snyder says, well, they're about the same as they were, and we've made it up in different ways. What about education funding, public education funding?
Well, our public education funding goes, if you go into our Constitution, Michigan's Constitution, you know, in Article 2, Section 8, the legislature shall maintain and support a system of free public elementary and secondary schools.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, free, that tells me, okay, on the backs of who and at the expense of what?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's, you know, funded by the taxpayer, but is it that we're not spending enough on public education, or are we not spending our money wisely?
You know, about 25 years ago in Michigan, the so-called Proposal A changed the
Proposition
the,
A.
Yeah, changed the funding.
Proposal A.
Proposal.
Yeah.
They changed the funding in Michigan from property tax, and of course the money would be then collected by the state, and our sales tax went up from 4% to 6% supposedly to help that, and that was because there was a great disparity of money spent on education in one district compared to another. So there was rich districts and poor districts. The rich districts typically spent a lot more per student. Typically they would have better outcomes. Now we still have a lot of disparity, and we have a lot of problems in some of the schools. Do you think that Snyder's approach with the Education Authority, EAA, whatever that second A stands for, is the right way to go? Or would you, what do you do about the funding disparity?
Well, the funding disparity is basically what you need is more school choice.
More competition.
And more competition through maybe private schools. We do have, you know, charter schools, but basically they're still funded by the state, therefore they're run by the state. It's the state rules. What I would, and unfortunately, in our Constitution is about the strongest anti-school choice in the United States. It basically says no payment, credit, tax benefit, exemption or deduction, tuition voucher, subsidy, grant or loan, or public monies or property shall be provided directly or indirectly to support the attendance of you know, private schools or to employ employees in private schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the strictest. Now, some other states that have gone to a voucher program have seen their education results go up. But unfortunately, in Michigan, it would require, you know, a referendum on the Constitution, and the last one that was done was in 2000, went down in flames.
I kind of wonder, because, you know, certain parts of the Constitution are not being followed too strictly, such as cutting public pensions, which is totally not supposed to be done under the present state Constitution. And I know the Detroit situation was ruled an exception because they were state-caused or state situation of bankruptcy. It didn't happen naturally. Emergency financial management and so on. Is that a good trend, having the state come into all these cities, emergency financial management in so many different school districts under state control? Do you like that? Or
is that's what I was trying to say, is that we need to break the monopoly here. The only way we can break the monopoly is to allow more school choices, particularly to, you know, people who are low income, because they're pretty much, I would much rather my money follow the child instead of the child always following the money. And one way you could do this, and some states are doing this, is through a, a state scholarship program, or in other words, you privatize the voucher. It's a scholarship tax credit, basically.
What it does is
if I would donate money, you know, to a private school, I would get a tax credit on that. Or if you know, companies or corporations decide to, you know, donate into a scholarship fund to allow low-income children to go to private schools, they would get a tax credit on that. And it wouldn't exactly be state funding, and it wouldn't exactly provide a lot of state control over these private schools. So basically what it is, hey, it's, you know, it's my money. I mean, I should be able to spend it the way I want to. And if I want to help out through this, you know, scholarship tax credit program, help out lower income kids, get a better school so they could stay out of jail, which actually we do jail way too many people. And that would be a good way to reduce the prison cost also.
Because
too many nonviolent drug offenders in jail. So I would definitely...
Those are some good ideas. Yeah, I appreciate that.
Would push for something like that. And that sort of separates, and that sort of gets out, away from the voucher program.
Right, yes, yeah. I'm going to let my colleague, John Conroy, have a question here, because I haven't so far. But after that, we're going to let you do sort of a summary of why people should vote for Mary Buzema and Scotty Bowman for governor, lieutenant governor, and Libertarian Party. And we also have to, of course, get contact information and find out if you have any public appearances in the Detroit area that you know about right now. I mean, it'll be on the website probably, but you can also mention those too. But John, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Mary.
Hi.
There he is.
Good talking to you again. I was
good talking to you too.
Yes, I was curious. You being from the Kalamazoo area, Grand Haven, there's great educational opportunities in with Kalamazoo College as well as Western Michigan, and Kalamazoo Community College as well. So you have all three types of education going on in that area. What would you say to others and try to get that kind of education established in other parts of Michigan?
As far as what, more?
More of the variety that Kalamazoo area has.
Oh, like I said, I think the scholarship, the tuition tax scholarship tax voucher would be a great way to diversify or, provide more schools of choice, in that area. And also, the states are required to fund, colleges, universities, et cetera. But with the state money also comes strings, as far as, diversification of programs and things like that. Instead of sending all that money directly to the colleges, maybe we should think about giving them to the students so they can choose what colleges they want to go to.
I see. Individuals, are you interested in changing our Constitution then?
I would be interested in amending it, particularly in areas as far as, educational choice. Absolutely.
Yeah. By the way, Henry Ford College here, we, of course, have one of the lowest tuitions in the state, but something like we're very unique in terms of our budgeting. We take very little federal money. We take some, for work-study programs and things that are like that, but unlike all the other two-year schools, we have like 65 or 70% funding just from the tuition. And the tuition is still one of the lowest. So we're a pretty good model for economy of higher ed, at least at the two-year level, even though, yes, we have some additional connections to do a three-year and a four-year programs right here on this campus. But there are ways to creatively do that if you have some creative management. Well, I'm sorry that we don't have more time and yet we've given you more time than anybody else has so far.
Oh, no, thank you very much.
Please summarize why people should vote for you and Scotty, Libertarian Party in general, in the November 4th election.
The reason that I'm running and Scotty is running with me is really to give people a choice in this election. You can either go with a big government Democrat or a big spending, big government Republican. We believe in the smallest government possible to give you more money in your pocket, less taxes. We also believe in, the libertarian message, and actually, you learn about being libertarian when you're kids. Your mom, your dad, or whoever, when you're in kindergarten, they tell you don't hit. It's not yours, don't take it, and keep your promises. And that's basically what we do. We believe that the highest duty of government is to defend the inalienable right of the individual. Mm-hmm. And a government that is limited in its power won't hit you and take your stuff.
Okay, good summary there. By the way, I have, maybe you've read it, maybe not, that there is a book currently out, a new book by Matt Kibble, or Kibbe, K-I-B-B-E, called Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Stuff, a Libertarian Manifesto. And on the back, he summarizes these six principles. And I'm not sure he's a member of the Libertarian Party, but he does a great job with the Libertarian principles. Number one, don't hurt people. You just said that. Don't take people's stuff. Number three, take responsibility. Number four, work for it. Number five, mind your own business. And six, fight the power, whatever he means by that. I'm sure he's not going after Detroit Edison here or DTE.
No.
But that's the, in terms of fighting the power, if you're losing your liberty, you need to stand up and change the course of things. So I wish there were more books that explained other points of view in such a entertaining way as Matt Kibbe's book here. And maybe you can get hold of it and pass it out at your campaign appearances. Do you know of any in the Detroit area where you're going to be appearing live?
Yes, I will be in the area on October 4th.
Oh, Saturday?
Oh, no, October 3rd. I have
Friday.
Appearance, I believe, in Detroit on 8 Mile Road. I'll have this stuff.
We will share it with our listeners, too. And the website is mi.lp.org. Or if people want to see the National Party website, it's just lp.org, Libertarian Party. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Mary Buzema, candidate for governor, Libertarian Party. We really appreciate your helping us get the word out about all kinds of choices that people really have if they want to get some things done in a different way.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mary.
We'll keep in touch.
Oh, and I hope I can, when I'm in the area, which I will be at the beginning of next month, I drop in and see you guys.
That's certainly possible. Yeah, so send us an email, whatever.
I will.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye
for now.
Bye, Mary. Yep.
Bye. Mary Buzema, a candidate for governor, Libertarian Party, gave her a little more than 30 minutes, but a candidate for governor. Okay, if we have other, and we have some more candidates scheduled, let me mention right now on the new WHFR Journal, making waves, doing things differently than other radio stations. Next week, something to look forward to, not Scotty Bowman, and not Scotty Bowman, the Libertarian for governor, and not Scotty Bowman, the hockey guy. That's totally not the Scotty Bowman Libertarian. But next week we have another Bowman who's going to be here live in person. Terry Bowman, spelled B-O-W-M-A-N. He's Republican. Yeah. Okay, challenger, though, okay, in a contest where there is no Libertarian and there is no Green Party candidate, and I don't think there's a U.S. taxpayers candidate either, for the 12th District U.S. Congress, going to Washington, D.C. from this area. The 12th District runs from Ann Arbor all the way through a little bit of Dearborn all the way downriver to about Trenton. And it currently, that position representative is John Dingell. And, of course, he is retiring this time. We have invited his wife, Debbie Dingell, to be on this show sometime in upcoming weeks. Haven't been able to schedule that yet. She's not really the incumbent, although her name is incumbent, her last name is, but she's a challenger too. And Terry Bowman is going to be here. I'm going to give him 30 minutes, try to keep to that, to talk about what he believes in. He's got a unique bio. For example, he's a union member, but a Republican. So we'll challenge him as to how he got associated with the Republican Party. So that's coming up next week on the Journal. And October 3rd, that's been scheduled already. And Mary, in fact, Mary and this person may be going to the same affair later that day here in Detroit area. In fact, we're going to have the governor, the candidate for governor, not Snyder, but the candidate for governor from the Green Party of Michigan, mm-hmm. Paul Holmaniak, right here live in the studio and on this show on October 3rd. So that's going to be an exciting day. Get another major third party candidate for governor on the Journal. And we do challenge the local newspapers, all of them, even the Free Press and the News, to give all the candidates equal time and space. They all are legally on the ballot. Don't you think it's a democratic principle that you should find out about them? Find out what they stand for, just in case you decide after you hear that you do have a choice. You do have more choices than you thought. You don't know until you find out. You know, you can still go and vote Democrat and Republican. All right, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, but you can't. I don't think you can fairly do it unless you explore all your options and then make the best choice. That's always, I thought, the principle of democracy. And unfortunately, the way we do politics and political campaigning these days, we hardly get to that. John?
You just certainly, by having a learned choice, you make a smarter choice.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. A couple of things in the local area in the last 10 minutes that we have on the show today that we want to cover. Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, September 10th. The hookah bars are still in the news. Of course, there's a six-month moratorium on any new smoking establishments in the Dearborn area. Supposedly, the city council is going to look at laws and look at how some of the current state laws are being gotten around by some of the establishments. And there's some health issues. For example, the latest twist or turn is that some of the hookah bars locally are evading state law about smoking establishments with herbal claims, mm-hmm. claiming that they're not smoking tobacco. Or the tobacco is very little. Apparently, hookah can be smoked, and I don't know the details of this. I haven't researched it. But apparently, you can smoke with substances that are not tobacco and not against the law, at least not currently. And in some cases, there's a little tobacco mixed into these other substances for smoking. Or in some cases, I guess you could just smoke tobacco in a hookah. I don't know. But apparently, that's an interesting story from the Press and Guide. Also from the Press and Guide, from their website. It's a big hoopla because, where was the picture here? At the last city council meeting, which is the last city council meeting in the old city hall. I gave you that story somewhere, John. Mm. Doesn't matter. I'll summarize it. They actually have a video on the pressandguide.com website of the last meeting. At the end of the last meeting, they had a lot of yelling back and forth between people from the audience who were asking for a resolution to stop supporting Israel. Okay? Of course, you know that Israel has been bombing the heck out of Gaza area and been very violent to Palestinians in general. Hamas, of course, the democratically elected representative, which vows to kill all Jews, which isn't a great platform to get elected, but they're still the democratic leaders of the so-called Palestinians, even though they don't have their own city-state at this point. So many people have been killed. I'm not sure if there's a ceasefire in place right now, but anyway, they said that the city council should pass a resolution to boycott Israel. I don't know what that means. And Councilman Mark Shishanian repeatedly interrupted the protesters to say that the issue was not a city matter. Besides, what would it mean? We're going to boycott Israel. Does the city, and here's a question they didn't ask in the article or maybe in city council, do we have any business with Israel? It seems like we had a mayor, whether it was Guido or someone, that actually visited Israel looking for business and business connections. So if we have business with Israel, yes, it would be a city matter, because if we're going to boycott Israel, we would nix any, at least any further business agreements with them or business situations with them. But otherwise, it's a national issue. And of course, we have a lot of people locally who do represent, first of all, peace groups who would just like to see people stop killing one another in general. And I'm in that group. I think it's a great principle. I love one of our ambassadors to the United Nations many, many years ago, about two decades ago, very smart guy. He said, the only way to stop fighting is to stop fighting. And you think that's a conundrum, but think about it. It's true. The only way to stop killing people is to stop killing people. Okay? Not as easy said than done, they say, but it's just wrong. It's morally wrong. And I don't care what you think your reasons are, you don't have reasons. I don't care what your emotions are all messed up. Okay? That's my personal opinion, not necessarily that of Henry Ford College. But by gosh, they had to have more than five Dearborn police officers stationed around the city council chambers throughout the duration of the meeting, expecting violence from people asking for no violence? I don't know. That seems strange to me. I wonder if there was a SWAT team, if they had automatic weapons, too, while they were there. Nonetheless, they got past that, and bye-bye City Hall in terms of City Council. City Council meetings from now on will be in the Dearborn Administrative Center, 16901 Michigan Avenue, the former ADP building, and more city offices will be moving over in the next couple of months, too. City Hall, of course, has already been sold to ArtSpace. Yep. Okay. Big deal. I even saw signs on campus, John. AAUW Dearborn branch, which is the American Association of University Women. Okay. Somebody wanted to come in the door, and they, even though they heard my voice, they refused to read the sign. Okay. Anyway, they're hosting their 63rd annual used book fundraiser. So they're raising money to do a lot of good services for the community. And boy, do they have the books. They're going to be at the Adre Ice Arena. So get your ice skates on. No, I think they cover it over, and they make it into like an expo. And they have tons of great, high-quality, usually university-type textbooks or classics. And it starts next Thursday, September 18th, and that's when the best selection would be, going through the 21st. So it's a fundraiser for the nonprofit group American Association of University Women, their 63rd annual used book fundraiser, and that's big. Also next week, actually starting Monday the 15th, is the National Drive Electric Week. Yep. Have you driven an electric car? You know, it's a choice. Okay, they only go about 80 miles on a single charge right now, but most people don't go that far round trip any day. Any day. Maybe on weekends every now and then. But and you say, well, where can I drive an electric car? Well, first of all, Village Ford in Dearborn supposedly handles electric Ford cars. But they don't always have one to drive there, which is strange. So you could call them. But here, the big event for National Drive Electric Week is going to be in Ann Arbor next Friday, from 10 in the morning to 8 at night, and they're going to have electric cars from several different companies, certainly the Nissan Leaf and probably the Ford Electric Focus, and others, too. And you can drive them yourself out there. Now, they do recommend that you sign up Register in advance. I'm looking for, looks like EEA, which is not the educational authority, eea.michigan@gmail.com for questions. Oh my gosh, it was a link from this. Okay, I'll tell you where else you can go, though, to sign up for the Briarwood National Drive Electric Day, which is next Friday, the 19th. You can go to Sierra Club of Michigan, and that's easy, sierraclub.org, and because they're coordinating events all around the country. I'm a member of the Sierra Club, by the way. It's the number one environmental group in the whole country. They're very responsible. They know a lot, and they have a component is working on the alternative energy vehicles, of course. So you can find out where the Briarwood event is and even register if you at least go to sierraclub.org. And you don't have to register necessarily. Just go by Briarwood Mall and look for the National Drive Electric event next Friday between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. And if you're not able to listen to WHFR the Journal next Friday, the Terry Bowman interview, Republican Terry Bowman, that's okay. Remember, we're a podcast from WHFR.fm. You can listen anytime after broadcast from our website. Download the MP3 and go jogging with it, whatever you want to do. Okay, so you won't miss anything. I think if you haven't driven an electric car and you don't know what the choices are and the options are, again, you're not going to make the best decision on your next transportation purchase if you just don't know. I've got my preferences on that. I have a very economical gas-powered car right now. I get 35 miles to a gallon on the highway. Yes, I do. Okay, it's premium gas, I'm sorry to say, but... John?
Jay, I want to make quick mention of next Tuesday and Wednesday's welcome back days at Henry Ford College, where we'll have all kinds of folks welcoming people back to school.
Yeah, it's mostly for students who are already here. We're giving students on campus a chance to look at all the special activities and organizations that we have. And that could be an adjunct to or an addition to an enrichment to their academic program. Mm-hmm. And I know WHFR will be there with our table right here in the Student Center, large pavilion space. We'll have our info table out there. And it is something especially for current students. But by golly, if you aren't a current student, you have time next Tuesday or Wednesday from 11 to 2, actually, next Thursday, too. They got some outside vendors coming in talking about healthcare and things for students. So if you're at all student-oriented or you'd like to see what's happening on the campus, in addition to our classes, everybody can come by and find out what's going on. We have a lot of different activities, including WHFR, that are happening, and you can find out more next Tuesday, Wednesday. We'll be there, and Thursday also for some other things that are being offered to the students. 11 to 2, Student Center. Anything else, John? We got to go.
Yeah.
Highway 61, the best in the blues is beginning. Yeah, this is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. Thank you for listening today. I'm just looking. Congratulations to Mayor John B. O'Reilly. He's appointed to the Local Community Stabilization Authority Council.